This is the Echo Network.
Kelly's Westport Inn presents the Royalman Report with Casey Royalman.
He's an important member of the sports atmosphere in Kansas City.
Michael Engel.
We actually said during the interview that we consider Michael Engel to be our Scott Carillo of our program.
Jeff Herr.
Kansas City's a baseball team. I'm telling you,
and
Chris Kamler, who is the producer of the Royalman Report.
Sorry, Troy.
Music by 49 Stones and Andre and the Giants. And now, the Royalman Report.
Which is this group of Royals fans, like three or four of them, and they are kind of clinically insane.
And welcome to it. Here we go. I know I have that time. It's Sunday night, of course, you're listening to the Royalman Report. I am Jeff Herr, sitting in the hosting chair this week. Some of that is just what happens. You hit the ball hard. you can't really get upset about that. It's just that the circumstances and the situations haven't been working out. But like you said, there are people that are hitting. I mean, Billy Butler is going crazy.
He lost by Stockus.
Stockus actually lost Stockus to lead the team in on base percentage right now.
I mean,
who would have thought that?
And he's been a great defender, too.
Like, and he's
been all around. He's the team MVP right now, if you ask me. I mean, he has just been everywhere.
Yeah, for somebody that, you know, we all figured was going to have a slow start. The first 2 weeks.
I mean, we're talking about that.
The first 2 weeks were really slow, but since, I mean, he's hitting for power. He's got 3 homers now. Hit his third today. And he's, you know, he's got a great slugging percentage. He's second on the team in OPS. He's at 300.
And for the first time, you know, when I look at him up there, he looks comfortable. He looks like a major leader.
Yeah.
Like, you know, all last year, I thought he looked a little timid. He looked a little, you know, there were times where he looked more comfortable than others. But my overall impression was that he was still learning the ropes, which is fine. I mean, he's a young guy. He should be like that. But now he steps up there. He knows what pitches he wants to hit. He knows to lay off. He has an approach more similar to a Billy Butler or Eric Hosmer. Not quite there yet, but he's getting closer. And hey, that's what you like to see. You know, if there's some good that can come out of that streak, I mean, he's not going to be the biggest
player. High point. I think Kevin Goldstein mentioned it during spring training. One of the keys for Moustakas was last year he had that awful, awful start. And in the last 2 months, he made those adjustments to kind of go the other way, to hit the ball and change his approach a little bit. And Goldstein was talking about how he wanted to see if he could translate that change in approach and being willing to go the other way and then integrate his natural power back into it. And it looks like he's been able to do that. He's had a couple of doubles that he's just, you know, punched the other way down the line. And
he's just having awful luck. It's not that he's striking out a ton. It's not that he's not getting around on the ball. He is just, it's like Billy Butler at the beginning of last year, you know, when people were saying trade him, it's the same kind of deal. It's just awful luck. It's insane.
Yeah, I think it was Bellinger who wrote one of his columns. Eric Hosmer's got 5 homers, but he's also got, you know, that play where he hits it to left field and just hits it hard as he can. The fielder goes down, falls down, and still makes a catch because it's hit right at him. I mean, what can you do about those kinds of things? And you can't do much. And you just kind of have to let them get through it and hope that they don't try to make too many changes themselves, which is, you know, kind of thematic for tonight's shows. You know, don't panic. Get your idea right. You know, have the right, you know, for lack of a better term, process in place to get yourself through these things and stick with it.
And I like that. From what I've seen from Hosmer, he doesn't look like he's really pressing too much. And maybe a little bit, but I think for the most part, he keeps under control.
And he's still trying to walk. I mean, he's got 10 walks. That's second most on the team behind Alex Gordon, which is kind of surprising. You would figure Billy Butler would be there. You know, Butler is getting too many hits.
Yeah,
he was. Just, and that's fine. It's perfectly fine. But with Hosmer, if he starts striking out more and doesn't walk, that's when I think I'll be worried.
If he starts striking out on bad pitches, those low and away, everyone loves throwing Hosmer low and away, but he's done pretty well in his career.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes he bites, but everyone does. But he's done pretty well laying off, at least in what I've seen. So,
you're right, the Hosmer's going to end a deal, but it looks like Gordon's finally come out of his.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, he looks to be getting that confidence back from 2011.
And still, pretty defense. He made 2 or 3 very good plays during this Twin series. And Rob Homer, which ended up being the one run difference in the game, and had a couple of other plays, diving catches and whatnot. As long as he's doing that.
It seems like Gordon, for whatever reason, his offense feeds off his defense. And I mean, when he starts making better plays, he starts playing better at the plate. And, you know, maybe that was because he never really flashed much greatness at third base. I mean, maybe that was part of the problem. He was struggling defensively, and it was getting in his head, and it wouldn't.
He's somebody who I think builds off of a lot of the confidence that he sees from the staff, and that's one of the things he mentioned when he signed his extension was that Ned Yost has a lot of confidence in him, and you know he went down to Omaha in 2010 to learn the outfield and made as good of a transition to that as you could really see from a guy who's played third base all of his life. And then he comes up and has a great year in Omaha for the rest
promise of that season. Comes into Kansas City last year and has a career year on top of a Gold Glove performance in left field. And I think it's just that. I think he doesn't have to think quite as much. I think he can just kind of go out there and play. And he doesn't have to carry things over to his at-bats.
And it's easier not to get down on yourself when you know you're still bringing some to the table. When you know you're bringing good defense in one spot up there, then you don't have to worry about, oh, I'm dragging the team down on offense and defense. So, you know, you got something to fall back on.
That's true.
Other news this week, Danny Duffy yesterday. He was kept from the Fishing.
That was yesterday.
Yeah, that's right. Friday was kept from the Fishing. And actually, that's a good segue into talking about who our guest is going to be for the show. Today. I'm excited about this. Alan Yeager is going to be our guest. He's from YeagerSports.com. If you go to his website, he works with a ton of major league pitchers. He's worked a lot with the Rangers organization. He's worked with Mike Montgomery. He's worked with Dylan Cicone. He works with Trevor Bauer. He's worked with a lot of very prominent pitchers in the league and has a real, real great philosophy on pitching and pitching programs and how to facilitate different pitchers with different programs and things like that. It's going to be real interesting to hear what he has to say, talking about the work that he's done, him and his company have done with the Rangers, and just different philosophies they have on pitching. And it's going to be real interesting. I'm excited to hear what he has to say. I've already talked to him a couple of times. It's definitely some real interesting stuff. And it's some of the stuff that it's becoming a bigger and bigger deal now, because you hear a lot of these kids coming from high school and, you know, college too, coming into the draft. They're all about long toss. They're all about their specific programs. You know, we heard it last year, and we've talked about it a few times on the show, but it's only getting bigger, and it's going to be a bigger issue. So it'll be interesting. And I think a lot of fans don't really necessarily know all that much about it. So it'll be good to kind of get him on here and explain what it does, what the benefits of it are, and different things like that. So it should be interesting to have him on. So we're going to go to break, and then we'll bring it back with Alan
Kelly's Westport Inn. Do high gas prices got you down? Well, don't worry about it. Hop on the bus to Kelly's Westport Inn and save some jingle jangle as you drink until you're blingle blangle. Kelly's has the best open-air roof in town with beer and drink prices that are cheaper than at the pump. That's for sure. There's plenty of TVs to watch the soccer and the football games this summer. Plus, there's someone for everyone, and you can find him or her at Kelly's. Hearts and smoochies! So check out Kelly's Westport Inn, and you'll have more change to fill up your range, Rover. This has been Ben, Kelly's Westport Ben, saying smell you laters!
Kelly's Westport, it's the place where you buy beer. This guy came into the bar the other day and was telling me that they had friends in town and went down to that fancy bar district downtown. They went to one of those swanky no-ball cap bars and ordered a beer.
This wasn't one of those imported beers. Wasn't even one of those microbrew deals. This bartender rang up the tab, and he wanted $27 for three dadgum beers. $27 for some beers. That isn't right. That isn't fair. So he took them down to see us. We got them some nice big beers for half that price. Even had one of the ladies find a fella there. Got him some pizza. Listen, don't fall victim to those overpriced, no ball cap bars down there. You might as well take your money and throw it in the trash.
Kelly's Westport, it's the place where you buy beer.
Kelly's Westport Inn, tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
Meetings down here in San, you know, in the San Diego area. We had a meeting with everybody from John Daniels to AJ Preller to Scott Service. You know, we had a group of them at lunch, and the next day we went out and actually did the throwing programs. Myself and my partner, we actually went to the local high school Dana Point, and we actually did the long toss for them visually, and they were hook, line, and sunk, man. They loved it. You know, one of the key questions I asked them at the table, which to me was, I think, changed the tone of the whole conversation, is I said, because they had, just for the record, they had been a 120, and for the listeners, 120 basically meaning 120 feet. They'd been this very restricted kind of rehab mentality-oriented throwing program, which is kind of what the 120 program is, for as long as anybody can remember with Texas. And I asked them, I said, why do you guys cap your... Because I basically know everybody's throwing program in every organization. You know, I've done this for 20 years. I've had probably 300 professional guys go through our program. So I've had a heartbeat and a pulse on pretty much what's going on out there. So I asked them why they capped their players at 120, and their answer was they didn't have an answer. They didn't know. So we had their attention quickly with that one. And one thing led to another, and the day after our meetings left, Scott Service, who was the farm director at the time, who's now with the Angels, he might have been down in the Dominican Republic within a week of that time, because their plan was is to almost, if you will, use that as an experiment to see how it went down there. And I became very close with the manager down there, because at some point the Rangers sent me down to the Dominican, you know, a few months later, and I know for a fact that, you know, they had two clubs down there. They had no arm injuries the entire summer between two of the clubs, which is basically unheard of. And they had an average gain of miles per hour in their first six-week window doing the program of like 2 to 3 miles per hour per arm. And it's always tricky talking about velocity gains. You can say, well, was it Mother Nature? Did they learn a new mechanic? But this was across the board. And it, more importantly than that, when the manager tells you face-to-face that there's no question in his mind that there was a significant increase in velocity across the board when kids started long, you know, doing this program, you know, it's pretty powerful. So that was kind of it. And once the Dominican thing got rolling, it was a no-brainer for them. I mean, it just became part of the culture. I had met with the pitching coordinator in spring training, Danny Clark. Yeah, I had a chance to get to know a number of people in that organization, and it just has become part of the culture. I mean, the culture of the Rangers is they're a huge long toss organization. There's no limits really to their guys. They don't make you long toss, but they're very proactive with pushing it. And also, you know, Nolan Ryan came in at the exact same time that we had those meetings, so he helped on the other end of it, which, you know, we were on the conditioning long toss side, and he was on the, well, let's get rid of the pitch count or let's not make that so important and make guys work deeper in games. So it was a perfect storm in a positive way for this to all happen. And so I think now you look at the Rangers, and they're the absolute poster boy for professional baseball, for any baseball, really. Their system right now, to me, is just a machine. They're going to be pumping out big arms, and I look last year at the trade they made for Mike Adams. They traded two big-time prospects, pitchers, and the reason why is because they could. They have so many arms in the organization.
It's weird to me when you see that and you see the research that people like you and others have done, and you see these results. And like you said, you know, it's not necessarily 100% always based on this. You know, some of it is just natural progression of pitchers and whatnot. But when you see such stark results across the board, you know, what happens, what do organizations that don't want to adopt this type of a thing and just haven't kind of jumped aboard the long toss train, if you will, yet, you know, what do they say when you approach them or when you talk to them about long toss? What do they say as to why they don't believe in it or they don't want to adapt to that type of a program?
It's a fantastic question, and here's the thing. I've been on the field doing the research and development, if you will, for 22 years as a teacher, but probably close to 30 player. And so I've lived it, taught it, had the feedback. I basically have had a lab for 20 years. And the problem is that when you're a major league organization and you know a lot of things well, which they do, but you don't have, let's just say, as much insight or as much experience as someone like myself, it's almost like they kind of don't know what they don't know. And what they do know is that their program is really backed by the medical community. These are things that come out of like ASMI, where people start getting really freaked out past 120 feet or 180 feet. And so what happens is they don't really have experience with long toss at all, but they have experience with what their program is, and there's medical community backing in their minds, which we can get into later. Why I'm actually doing an article on this right now. Why I think that the medical community's information is very skewed and not very consistent at all with reality. I mean, what I consider to be reality of what's going on out there. But that's a side note. But back to your question is this. There's a disconnect, and so what happens is that they feel like they're doing it the right way because they have the quote-unquote right people in place, which is really more of the medical people, the trainers, the strength and conditioning guys. And so in their mind, someone like me coming to them is not consistent with what their belief system is, and so therefore it's almost like it's hard to even get into the door, which to me is sad because I'm the one on the front lines been doing the work, and I'm the one that has the feedback over 20 years. You know, they're taking information from doctors and rehab people that have maybe, A, never touched a baseball, B, if they have, they may have never thrown a ball over 100 feet, and C, they definitely haven't been on a field, the ones that I've met, that have been with kids throwing 300 feet before for 6 months, a year, 5 years, 8 years, 10 years at a time. And once they start doing that, and then they want to give me their expertise or their feedback, I'll be glad to talk about it. But the problem is that I'm dealing with people that don't have experience in throwing and conditioning the way we do. They may have great experience in surgery, great experience in rehabbing arms, but we start when the rehab is done. That's when the training begins. And unfortunately, these organizations stop where the rehab ends, and that's what they think is a throwing program. So I guess in a roundabout way, to try to answer your question, is it's very disappointing because on one hand, I feel like with the Rangers, there can be an overnight significant impact in the development of the arms. And unfortunately, what they're doing on these really restricted programs is these kids are treading water at best with their arm strength. And really, they're all, in my opinion, they're all set up for a best case scenario is loss in velocity. A worst case scenario, of course, is breaking down. And I've called this 120 program, I mean, you can see I don't mince words, I've called it a death trap, I've called it a suicide machine, it's a career ender waiting to happen, and in their minds, this is the frustrating part, in their minds they think they're doing it right, so it's kind of like, you know, what can you do? You can only lead the horse to water and hope they listen, but it's quite sad because these organizations, in my opinion, are clearly shooting themselves in the foot.
We're talking with Alan Yeager from Yeager Sports here on the Royal Maine Report. Alan, one of the questions I have, I work with youth sports a lot, and it really is kind of a Hatfield versus McCoys. I mean, there's people that are into this long toss program, and there's people that are vehemently against it. How big of a deal is it for these kids coming out of high school and college, even down to the 12-year-old level or 11-year-old level when you learn to throw your first curveball? How big of a deal is it that these kids get started early on? And the thing I like about your guys' long toss program, there's a place here in Kansas City called Regal Athletic that we also did an interview with Kevin Scobie. They're into a very structured long toss program as well. How big of a deal is it to get started early on that, and how can that help you as your career goes through?
Well, you guys have some good questions. Well, it's another great question. I was this way, and kids that I grew up with and some of the best arms I've worked with, it seems like there's a pretty constant theme, which is they threw a lot when they were younger, and I don't mean off a mound. They just threw a lot, whether it's oranges, apples, rocks, baseballs. They use their arm a lot. And so my first suggestion for anybody that's very really concerned about their kid's arm being healthy and durable and strong and ultimately, of course, strong, building arm strength, which I guess I said was strong, is get your kids out there throwing often. What I mean by often is if you just went out and played catch, forget long toss, just go go out and play catch for 8 to 12 to 15 minutes a day, 4 to 5 days a week. I'd say 40 weeks a year if possible, 30 weeks a year, whatever it is. But you want the workload. You want the reps. You want the arm to be working at a young age. You don't want kids pitching a lot at a young age. If they do, I'm not big into pitch counts with guys that are well-conditioned on a long toss program, but at a young age I am. And also I'm more concerned with pitch counts relating to did you throw on Monday and Tuesday or Monday and Friday. So get out there and throw. That's the number one priority to building a healthy arm is throw often and not off a mound and not breaking balls at a young age, but just throw the ball, and at some point 90 feet is going to turn to 120 and 120 is going to turn to 140 and 140 is going to turn to 180, and 8 minutes of throwing with the kid getting tired, not sore, just tired, is going to turn into 14 minutes. 14 minutes is going to throw into 19 minutes, and you're going to have kids at 12, 13, 14, they're going to be able to throw the ball 200, 240, 250 for 30 minutes or whatever it is, three or four times a week, and it's going to feel great. I have a kid right now actually on YouTube named Hunter Green. He's 12 years old. He started doing our program at 7. He's not a big 12-year-old. He might be 5'3". 130, I have no idea, but he's out to 80 yards now, he's out to 240 feet, and he's just effortless and free, and you can just see when he throws, like, man, that kid could probably throw all day. So, which, ironically, 240 for a 12-year-old is 120 feet further than these 120-foot programs for the best, healthiest, strongest arms in the world. So, you know, just put that in your pipe and smoke it for a little while. But so, get him out there throwing. Period. And if ASMI says they need to take 3 months off a year, I personally agree with it. But get them out there and throw. The arm is just—it's an organism waiting to grow. It's atrophy versus or regeneration versus degeneration. Get it active. Get it throwing. Stay off the mound as much as you can, except when you know you just need to do your pitching, which is fine. But if I had my own kid, my own kid would be throwing 5 days as long as he wanted to do it. We'd be throwing 5 or 6 days a week, and some days maybe we wouldn't go as far or throw as long, but we'd be throwing pretty much every day.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I don't get with this kind of this disconnect that you brought up is, you know, if you want to hit better, you go into the cages and take your hats. If you want to get better at fielding ground balls, you have someone hit the ground balls to you. You shag flies if you're an outfielder. If you want to get better at free throws, you shoot free throws. If you want to get better and lift bigger weight numbers, you go out and lift. But the idea seems completely backwards in the general baseball rhetoric to, you know, if you want to be a good pitcher, don't throw. And that's what I don't understand is why is that such a cookie cutter approach with so many people? Is it an ego thing? Is it just dogma? That's how it's always been for the last 60 years? Or I don't get where it comes from. And I'm sure you get a lot of resistance to it. So what's your take on that kind of spy versus spy thing?
Well, what's happening is it's cool because this question has to do with, I'm actually doing research on an article. I interviewed Dr. Yoakum last week. I've got questions coming back from Kevin Wilk, who's the head PT guy at ASMI, and because I'm asking the same questions. And pretty much from what I've learned over the last, again, 10, 20 years and just asking a lot of questions, cause I'm curious, where did this 120 program come from? And what happened is that, well, think about it. In 77 or 78, you had your first Tommy John. You had shoulder surgeries and elbow surgeries started becoming in fashion in the 80s. So, obviously, when you have a surgery, like anything in life, you have rehab. And so, somewhere around the 80s leading into the 90s, you just, rehab started becoming, obviously, as normal as BP. So, there had to be a protocol, so you had the rehab guys and the PT guys and the medical community that created a throwing program, which makes sense because you start from, you know, surgery and trauma to strength and conditioning post-op, you know, stuff in the clinic, and then you got to get on the field at some point, so you start at 30 feet or whatever it is, and so they came up with a program that basically caps, and by the way, this is a good question because I'll tell you what Dr. Yoakum's answer was, but they cap out at like 120 is when their rehab finishes, and it might take a month or two or three to build up to that point. But as Dr. Yoakum said, which I kind of figured this had to be the answer, but he said, look, when our post-surgery throwing program is done and they get out to 120 and they've built up to 12 or 16 minutes or whatever it is, we send them back to their major league team, or we send them back to their college or high school or their little league. And now it's on them to start training again and conditioning. Well, the problem is that this rehab program was so homogenous and so neat and tidy and even so incremental and, as you said, very cookie-cutterish. It just worked well when the medical community took more and more root in the baseball community as team doctors started, you know, getting hired and team trainers started getting hired and strength and conditioning guys started getting hired maybe in the late 80s, early 90s. So you had now a major medical influence in the baseball world. And then remember now in the early 90s is when the signing bonuses and the draft started going up, the multi-year contracts started going through the roof. So what happened now is there was a lot of paranoia. So I start out my article, which I might change, but my first line is it was the perfect storm, meaning this is how it all got lined up to where the infrastructure was created of a throwing program, if you will, to where there's so many minutes at 60 feet or so many throws at 60 feet and so many throws at 90 feet and so many minutes at 120. So what happened is you basically have a rehab program in place that has the medical community backing it, even though it's really where the rehab finishes and quote-unquote training should begin. And now you can see how this became part of the nomenclature of baseball. And now when you go to Spring Trainer Instructional League, at least up till 2008 with about 25 of the 30 teams, you had a very structured program that, as far as I'm concerned, is identical to the rehab program.
See, it's interesting how this all kind of got to this point now where, you know, something that, like you said, to start out more focusing on rehab and then teams just kind of take it as dogma. And I'm going to use that to kind of springboard into the question of, you know, the Royals have had, especially recently, just like every team have had, some guys that have been into the long toss now. You know, you've worked with Mike Montgomery from the Royals system, and you know, there are other guys, people like John Lamb, who it's been told have been done to do the long toss. And there's been some slight controversy from people that know in the Royals organization, you know, about the kind of different approach the Royals have wanted those pitchers to take and then seeing varying results. And, you know, you don't have to go into detail about them specifically, but just what kind of impact does it have when you bring in somebody who's been doing this long toss approach for years and years? Say they started when they're 12 years old, and they come up and they're 18, and they're drafted by a team like the Royals, and they say, you know, Royals, they know we want you to cut down to 120, or we don't want you to go all the way out to 300 or something. You know, what kind of impacts does it have when a team tells a player, no, we're gonna cut you down, we don't want you to do those kind of that program anymore?
When we send a player out that has done, by the way, you guys know your stuff, man. I'm impressed. when you take, like I said, when we met with the Rangers, there were about 25 out of 30. Now it's about 15-15 that are either long toss or very proactive long toss versus 120 or relatively conservative. But I can tell you based on about 18 years and, again, about 300 players that it's almost 100% that when a long toss arm, and this is also why I'm writing this article, and this is a question I asked Dr. Yoakum too, when you take a guy that's trained at 300 feet or someone like Bauer at 360 or Bundy at 380 or whatever the numbers are, and you put them into a 120 program or 150 or even 180, it's the first word that jumps out of my mind, which I hope is not too over the top, but it's catastrophic. Because what you're really telling me is, well, let me ask you a question. If I told you that you had stretched your hamstring out to 100% of its capability to where you're ready to go out and run a 60-yard dash as fast as you can and you know you're as prepared as you can be, and I said to you, now we're going to do the same scenario, but instead of, and we're going to use that as 350 feet. We'll make 300 feet as a very simple number. We'll say your hamstring is 300 feet. It's max, so you stretch it out to its max. And then I said to you, but now, instead of 300 feet, it's going to be 120, which is 40%. of 300 feet. So now you're only allowed to stretch your hamstring out to 40% of its needs or capabilities, and then I'm going to make you run the same race. The visual alone, I would think the first thing you're going to think of is your hammy's going to blow out.
I got a little twinge in my hamstring to think about that. So yeah, exactly.
So I know it's rudimentary, and I can hear some pitching people saying, there's other things involved, there's mechanics, but I'm being pretty black and white. It's really about that simple. You take a well-conditioned, look, if you're a marathon runner and you're used to running 20 miles a day or 18 miles a day or whatever it is, and I make you run a mile a day for a month or even 2 days, and then I make you go back out and run 20-something miles, the body starts to shrink and constrict and regress. And, I mean, does any pitching coach or any baseball scout want to ever talk in terms of those words when you're talking about an arm and whether it's a pitcher or not? Do you want to talk about restriction, regression, constriction, tightness, tension, short?
So,
I mean, are these words that we want to start talking about with our athletes? So catastrophic to me is a very, I take the subject very seriously because I've had pitchers who have been on a very well-conditioned throwing program, whether people agree with it or not, it's what they've been doing their entire life for a very long period of time. Their body is acclimated to it. Their conditioning level, like Michael Phelps, is incredibly high. They're very unique that way because they've trained so hard. And the last thing you want to do with any walk of life that's been trained to a certain level where they're just can roll out of bed and run 10 miles and recover fantastically the next day is take 60% off of that preparation or conditioning. Now, that's 300 feet, which is about how far a 90-mile-an-hour fastball will go at 35 degrees. Now let's talk about 93 to 97 or 98, where now you're getting into 350, 360, like Bauer. Now you're talking about 120 feet is a third. So now you're wiping out 66.7% of their needed, listen to this word, needed conditioning and preparation just to keep up with their normal activity for the day. Forget about pushing to a new threshold and advancing even more. I'm talking about just keeping their body, at the state where it's been trained to perform. You guys see what I'm saying? Now that hamstring analogy hopefully hits even harder because you're like, well, of course. How can you take an arm? And I asked Joakim this question. I said, if you deal with a player that's throwing 300-plus feet, because he's the Angels team guy, and Danny Heron's one of our kids, so he's well aware Danny Heron is a long-toss beast. So I said, if Danny Heron had a condition at 120 now for the next month and have to throw bullpens and deal with recovery period issues, I basically said, are there going to be what was the word I used? Are things going to be sacrificed, basically? Is there going to be a detriment to that? And one of the words he uses, which gave me almost like the hair standing on the back of my head, is he said the looseness is going to be sacrificed of the arm. And that was all I needed to hear,
One of the things, I think with some of this 300-foot stuff, we're watching some videos off of your website. One of them's the YouTube video of the kid throwing 340 feet and kind of how to stretch out and the pull-out phase and all that. It just looks, and I mean this in a nice way, it looks ridiculous. You're throwing the entire length of a football field. It just looks insane. And then we've also got a chat room up here at littlemanreport.com where we've got getting some feedback from one of our friends, Dan Garvey. So this is some of the thinking you're going against. He says he doesn't know why you need to go over 200. He has a friend that runs a 20-minute 5K. He's training for a half marathon, and it's slowed his 5K time down. What would you say to some of the perceptions? And it sounds like that's what you're getting a lot of in Major League Baseball is the perception that, 120, off of the look test, 300 looks crazy, 120 looks less crazy.
Well, now you know why it's easy for someone to defend that 120 program. Remember this, too. Perception and reality, as you know, are two different things. They can perceive anything they want. I'm living in reality. I'm living with 20 years of predictable, repeatable results. I, I feel like some of the best minds in the world on baseball, Brent Strom, Jerry Weinstein, you know, people that I think, you know, Ron Wolfworth, Derek Johnson at Vanderbilt, some of the people I think, you know, Marcus Elliott, who's the sports science guy for the Mariners now, Eric Cressy out of Massachusetts, Brett Fisher out of Arizona. I mean, these are some of the people on the strength and conditioning side as well that that are not only proponents of this, but they agree wholeheartedly with these needs. So these are people that are living proof of doing it over a long period of time and living it like myself. So when people have a perception, look, I'll be more than happy to give them 40 different reasons why it's valid and 40 different reasons why that their approach is not going to hold water. But at the end of the day, unless someone has an open mind and willing to listen, perception is great. It's not reality. And by the way, if a guy throws 200 feet and sits at 95 to 97 the entire year and never has arm problems, I wouldn't make him throw at 300 feet. I'm not saying you have to throw at 300 feet, but when an arm has been trained because of, and by the way, the reason why 200 feet versus 300 feet, if it's in the arm, is important, is because the extra 100 feet is more range of motion, it's more stretching, it's more extension, it's more freedom. 200 feet to 300 feet means you're going to have probably another 7 to 10 more minutes of throwing for conditioning. So, by the way, feel and accuracy and command, we haven't talked about that. If you only go to 200 feet and make X amount of throws at X amount of angles, you're missing, let's say from 200 to 300 feet, you have to learn to hit a guy to chest at 210 and 220 and 240 and 270 and 290. So you have to have some pretty good intimacy with your release point to be able to hit a guy in the chest from these different increments, you know, learning how to throw the ball with more angles up, learning how to take that angle up and to angle down. See, these are all benefits for getting to know your release point. So if someone gets it done at 200 feet and their velocity improves through the season and improves until they're 28 or 29, more power to them, man. I wouldn't say a word to them. But I got news for you. If a kid can throw 90 to 97 and he's training at 200 feet, he's doing himself a disservice. That's all. And if he's training at 120, obviously, he's doing himself a major disservice. Maybe not everybody. Maybe not every single pitcher in the world, but I'd go on a limb and say 95 to 98% of them, you want to train at 40 to 60% of what your arm's needs, your capabilities are, not to mention entering a new threshold where you can actually push the distance, which is how the body trains, by learning to move past its limitations. So now we're only talking right now about a guy like Bauer that, or Bundy, that's already just throwing it. What about the kid that can throw 90 and is only stretching out to 200 feet? Well, I got news for you. We love when those kids call us because we're like, well, can't guarantee it, but when we start pushing 300 to 330 to 340, you're probably going to be throwing 94 to 95 to 96. Now, it's not a guarantee, but that's how the system has worked predictably for me personally for 20 years.
And how you talked about, back to your hamstring example, of, you know, if you start to decompress that training, you open yourself up to injuries. What are the things that you noticed when, you know, someone, like, for, I mean, I don't necessarily know if it's attributed exactly to long toss or not, but, you know, someone like John Lamb has had an injury, you know, he's had a Tommy John surgery, he's doing his rehab now. You know, I'm not saying that was attributed to, you know, the Royals changing his program, but it could have been a factor. I'm not sure all the details. And when you look at Mike Montgomery, he hasn't had any injury issues the last year and a year or so, but he's had a lot of struggles. So do you see when you decompress, when you change that pitching program, do you see struggles outside of just injury issues? Are there control issues that come into play? Do some of their pitches, you talk about velocity drop, but do some of their pitches lose effectiveness, things like that? What other types of things do you see?
Exactly. Well, that was kind of a good follow-up to the example of 200 to 300 feet where you're starting to develop feel and command. So one of the other byproducts of these restricted throwing programs is exactly that. You lose feel. You lose command. Your arm is used to being stretched out with freedom, with range of motion, with hitting your partner at different increments. You have to go uphill a certain way. You have to go downhill a certain way. So you take out that freedom for a kid who's used to long tossing, and you put him on a restricted program, which, by the way, they often want the ball on a line. And now you've taken away and that range of motion and that feel in the arm. And it's a very common common feedback I do get from players. They immediately start losing feel. And then also, poor recovery period. You go from a well-conditioned long toss arm to a short-conditioned, restricted throwing program. The first thing that's going to happen, besides your velo going down, is your endurance is going to start being greatly diminished. So what the problem with that is that you go out and throw 80 pitches in a game, you're going to have much poorer recovery period. The shoulder's tighter, restricted. You have more swelling. You're going to be more in a desperate need to stretch your arm out again. And if you're in a restricted program, instead of stretching your arm out to try to, speed up the recovery period and get a positive thing going again, you're going into what we call a negative cycle. Once you have poor recovery period, you've got now, you're heading down a path where it's going to start to exacerbate the poor recovery period. So I'd say command and feel is the other major byproduct of these restricted throwing programs. And then recovery period. So, that goes hand in hand with injury, because that's what eventually is going to happen with poor recovery period. But if they don't break down officially, what the poor recovery period is going to do is they're going to start losing velocity and really around the fourth or fifth inning, they're going to start showing a lot of mediocrity and a lot of vulnerabilities. Command and feel is a big one, and it's way underrated, and I'm glad you brought it up because it's not talked about a lot. The long toss is not just about arm strength and arm conditioning and health. Those are the three big ones. But at the end of the day, to get pitchers, to get players out, you have to be a pitcher, of course. And our guys can't. That's one of the things they can't stand about these restricted throwing programs. They lose their feel.
Yeah, and we're talking with Don Yeager here on the Roman Report, and we've got just a couple minutes left. And Alan, I want to finish up with you with this question. You've talked about the long toss, and you mentioned earlier how you're big into the mental side of pitching as well, and yoga and different things like that kind of help for what look to be the best approach for a pitcher. So in your opinion, give us kind of, if you were pitching director for a program, kind of how would you want a pitching program handled? What would you kind of emphasize? And what would be, it seems kind of that you're just mainly just against taking that cookie cutter approach. How would you kind of handle that when you're, pitchers are flowing through your organization?
Well, first of all, if I can backtrack for a second, because when you asked me the other byproducts of the restricted program, I'm a little shocked at my maybe this first and most important detriment to that program, because I know the velocity is going to go down, and I know that the vulnerability of a breakdown is going to start occurring. But maybe the biggest factor in the short run is the psychology of the player. If you had whatever you did every morning, your favorite cup of coffee, whatever you did every morning that made you feel good, and I took that away from you, you're gonna be walking around with a little bit of bitterness in your day. And for these guys, whose bread and butter is their arm, and you take away their throwing program, which is their mental state of peace and preparedness, I don't want to lose sight of that. It's a major, major factor. When you take a kid, you take away the bread and butter of what a kid does and has been doing for his comfort zone as a pitcher for 6, 7, 8, 9 years, the psychology effect on that player is dramatic. So I'll finish with that point on that one. To get back to your answer, it's relatively simple. Number one is I'd make sure everybody was in tune with some form of yoga, stretching, flexibility, which I know is pretty common now, maybe more so for the breath work and the mental benefits of yoga. Two, from along those lines, is I'd want them to do something every day for breathing and relaxation and clearing their mind. Even at a young age, it's very powerful to get kids on that kind of a stream at a young age. From a physical point of view, and a throwing program-wise, band work. Band work is a critical part of our program as far as pre-throwing, preparation, range of motion, blood flow, and all that good stuff. also post-throwing for recovery period reasons. And then from the strictly the throwing program, look, it's easy to do a non-cookie-cutter approach. It's almost easier. You train the kids. First, you can keep it restricted. I don't like to use the word restricted. You can keep it formatted for a while. But my priority with every kid is to let them know that I want them to stretch their arms out every day and throw the ball as far as they can under control with good mechanics, but to learn to listen to their arm. Our pitching program would be all about what does it mean to listen to your arm, what does it mean to know to push your arm a little further on a given day, what does it know to back up if you need to, back off a little bit if you need to, because the most important thing you can teach a kid is to know their arm really well without the restrictions of a number of throws and without the restrictions of a set distance and without the restrictions of a set time. And I want all of our kids to learn that, because once they learn that, it is powerful. They are so empowered with what they can do on a given day. And as you know, once you teach a kid how to really understand his arm well, he's off to the races. If it's an 8-year-old, okay, you're going to have to be pretty structured. If it's a 9-year-old, pretty structured. But in this day and age, around 12, 13, get them out of the barn, man. Get the rope off them. Just, you don't even have to talk in minutes and distance. Let them know what it means to stretch their arm out, throw with some angle, just play catch, and let them go back as far as they can to where it feels good, and the rest will take care of itself.
Absolutely. And Alan Yeager from Yeager Sports, Alan, thank you so much for coming on the show and spending so much time with us and talking about this. This is great stuff. I really thank you. You definitely educated a lot of our listeners out there, and kind of put up, hopefully, you know, bring up a little bit more awareness of the long toss and kind of the problems that it can cause if you take somebody off that program and the benefits that it has if you allow somebody to keep using it. So I really appreciate you coming out here, Alan. Thanks a lot and for talking to us for as long as you did.
Well, it was my pleasure, and it was an honor to be on your show, and I can tell you guys do a great job and you're very informed, so it was actually a real treat to be on with you guys, and you know, feel free to use me as a resource, but good luck to you guys, and again, just thanks a million for having me on.
All right, thanks a lot, Alan. All right, with that, we're going to go to break here for a little bit. Yeah.
Doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
Oh, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Limitosis.
Yep. All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. bring your crap kicking and your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. Talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
Personal opinion that what they have kind of pushed on him has
adversely affected up to the point where he may not actually ever recover. And we talk about developing pitching. We need pitching. You know, this is something that the Royals need to go on board with. I'm not saying they need to go on and say every pitcher has to throw 300, 350 feet like Trevor Bauer does. You know, right. That's not necessarily what
he's the exception.
Exactly.
I don't know how people go that far.
Yeah, you know, and it's not what it's all about. What it's about is they just need to get rid of this rigidity that they have of this idea that everything has to fit in this one little line.
Well, I think what's fascinating is that as we kind of go on our little journey, and we'll have more about that here in a minute, as we go on more of our little journey into the inner recesses, if you will, of how the Royals operate, one thing is becoming abundantly clear is that they are just extremely stuck in their ways and extremely unwilling or uninterested, whether that be through marketing, whether that be through the on-the-field project. Yes, Dave Darby has some rigidity. Shut up. They're very conservative, if you will, and very stuck in their ways. And you're already against the grain because you're a small market team, as it were. You're just making it harder on yourself if you're not creative. Look at what the Washington Nationals, we were talking about this before the show, what they have been able to do. Just being goofy, and the Marlins, you know, just being out there. Sure, you know, they're going to fall on their faces from time to time, but I guarantee you they had a pretty good walk-up yesterday when Bryce Harper made his appearance. So, you know,
here's my takeaway from a lot of this. When, you know, like you mentioned, they're small market teams, so they're kind of behind it already. When you're in that position, you have to be a little more creative. You have to be a little more open to new ideas. And the Royals are completely unopen to any new ideas. It's, you know, a lot of the old school baseball knowledge. They've kind of come up to where, you know, now they see, you know, the virtues of scouting heavily in Latin America. But when you look at a team like the Rays, who are, you know, they're doing things right for that market. If they come through, they have James Shields, who's a good talent. They have David Price. And yeah, he was a first-round guy, but so was Luke Lortaber. You know, so there's no excuse, you know, other than somebody being completely unable to adjust. You know, it could have easily been David Price flopping somewhere else. You know, you've got to find a way to develop these guys to where they can be viable major leaguers. And it's not just them. I mean, Jeremy Hellickson is there. Matt Moore is down there.
It's going to rank right now through many pitchers. I mean, they had a six-man rotation last year just to get everybody in.
Yeah.
And
the Raiders are another team that's like that. They have so many arms.
And, you know, Al Nager was a big part of them revamping their pitching program. And it's, I mean, you know, we were talking about this before the show, Mike and I, just how the Royals have, it's one thing if the Royals aren't embracing any sort of new philosophies, if they look back at their last 15 years and say, man, well, look at all these great pitchers we developed.
Yeah, the Rays, Dan Kyle Snyder,
Dan Riker, I mean, all these guys are fantastic. Everything could throw 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, but when you get that track record and it hasn't panned out, you know, why not try something different? If you, you know, you do the same thing over and over and over and over again and it hasn't worked, you know, I don't see why you don't try something different. And maybe that's what, you know, Rick Knapp is in here from talking to Danny Duffy and Jason Adam and Brooks Pounders. He seems like he's open to that kind of thing, to something that's different. And if the player comes to them and talks to them about what kind of program they want to do, they're open to changing it a little bit. Like, I think that's ultimately the right thing because you can't take one approach to everybody. I mean,
absolutely.
You can't take the same approach to Eric Hosmer that you do with Chris Getz. You know, they're different players. They have different skills. They have different, you know, abilities to reach potential.
And I think that's the ultimate point. And historically, you don't see the Royals embracing that. And then recently, they kind of have, and maybe Rick Knapp is that step forward, and maybe it just kind of takes a little bit to permeate an entire organization all the way through the farm system. And if it does, then we're just going to have to deal with that at fans. But hopefully, it'll get to that point where that's no longer the case. But anyway.
Yeah, also, we're going to, maybe in the recorded portion, we're going to add about a 10-minute interview with Kevin Scobie, or we may just release it later, I don't know. But Kevin, why don't you real quick set up what that interview is, and we may just drop it right here.
Yeah, Kevin was an instructor at Regal for 2 or 3 years, and was also a pitching coach at Maple Woods. So he's done a lot of this stuff.
He's a writer for Kings of Coffin.
He's a writer for Kings of Coffin, yeah. And he's very, very big on, you know, not a cookie cutter approach. And not necessarily huge on the long cost, but the idea that you have to be open to doing something different and that the body is resilient and you can make those changes. You know, he's seen it himself. He was throwing 87 in high school. I got into college and they took him off to what he was doing and he dropped 5 miles per hour. Then he kind of latched on with different training programs and got that velocity back and then some. And so I think that's where he kind of takes it to heart. And it's that idea of just being open to doing something different and kind of stretching things out. And that's what we talk about. There's a little bit more about, you know, injuries and injury prevention in that approach.
All right, we're going to do an announcement. We're going to get Troy Olson, who used to be on the show at one point in time.
Yes.
And we're going to get him on the show on the phone. Listen, this is only for you people who hang out in our chat room and pay attention to us. We're going to actually release this officially here in a few days. But this announcement is for you guys who have put up with our crap.
We're going to leave it here.
And we honestly can't thank you guys enough for listening to us every week and following us on all of our shows. So we're going to call Troy, and we're going to give you our big announcement here. So hang tight just a second.
Hello. Is this the Chiefs calling to tell me I've been selected as a free agent quarterback?
Yes, it is. Yes,
it is. Yeah, right. Hey, I can do this. I can't lose this any more games than Matt Castle does, right? Well, let me just say, I'll let you make the actual announcement, Chris, but let me just say that, you know, after we've been doing this a little over a year now since Mike and I started this out, and when I originally thought about doing it, I had one reason behind it, and what we're about to tell you is getting us awful close to that. So just once you hear our announcement, just make sure you support anybody and anything involved with it so that we can show the people involved that you truly do want a true Royal Man report.
All right, well, as of May 10th, which is my birthday, which is your birthday, it's 5 days after Cinco de Mayo, if you're into that sort of thing, as of May 10th, you will be able to hear members of the Royal Man report in combination with the Kansas City-based Bonus Historical Society on ESPN 1510 as we launch the Kansas City Baseball Vault. And Michael Engel, why don't you tell us a little bit about what the Kansas City Baseball Vault will be?
The vault is looking at Kansas City Baseball past, present, and future. And we want to try to get former Royals players, former Kansas City Athletics, former anybody that has the story to add to the legacy of Kansas City Baseball. We want to talk to them because, you know, Kansas City is, in my opinion, easily one of the most interesting cities in the United States. And it doesn't get
just doing all this research, our baseball history goes back decades and decades.
It's far back as you have it. I mean, it's there. You've had the Kansas City Cowboys and things like that way back when. I mean, it was the end of the great thing.
Now, are we going to have any Kansas City Cowboys on our show?
No.
We're efforting towards that.
It's going to be difficult.
Yeah, we're going to try to go to that.
Excited. We're going to be on the radio, boys.
And, you know, along those lines, who would have thought when I asked Jeff to come on our show and talk about some of the old guys and what makes baseball in Kansas City special to him, who would have thought that when I made that phone call that it would have came back this way, came full circle to give us what we've all, well, what I've always wanted, and that's to make the Royal Man Report a legitimate radio show. And we are one step closer. We're now on ESPN 1510 under the Historical Society. But maybe we'll prove to those guys over at 810 that we're the new breath that we keep talking about, that that station's missing. You know, they kind of see it with three guys in the garage. They've got them on there. I can see us doing the same kind of thing, making that same kind of move. They started out as an internet radio show. They went to 1510, and now, you know, Jay's rocking it over there at 810, just as he should. And we have some of the most amazing listeners, amazing fans that we could ever ask for. And a lot of people have always told me, you know, I'd be a lot more likely to listen to the show if I could hear it on the radio. Well, now here's your chance. Thursdays, 6 p.m., ESPN 1510. And for me, just to say that is awesome. I cannot wait to have the first episode of the Kansas City Vault and to see where this goes.
And I just want to echo kind of what Troy was saying about the fans. Like, I mean, thank you guys so much. Because, we talked about it at the first year birthday or anniversary, whatever you want to call it. I mean, you guys kept the show alive. You know, you guys are the ones that are listening, keeping us around. You know, while on Twitter and the chat room and listening to the show, everything else. We really appreciate it. Couldn't appreciate it. Couldn't be more thankful for all you guys and everything you guys have done. I mean, we have probably the best fans of any show in the state. I'm saying it right now.
And if Kansas City ever becomes a baseball town, you're going to know it. Kansas City ever becomes a sports radio town, you're going to know the Royal Man Report. So here, we need those of you in the chat room, those of you who are listening on the podcast, you guys have heard this first. We need you to do a couple of things. One, go and follow on Twitter, KC Baseball Vault. KCBASEBALLVAULT. Follow that. That is going to not be an egg soon. It is growing once we get a logo and once we get a couple of things going. We are going to start publishing some information about our very first guest. Holy crap, guys. If this first guest,
I want to tune in
to our very first show.
Hopefully the biggest guest.
Biggest guest. And honestly, I can't think of 810, 610. I can't think of anybody who has had a guest of this caliber. That's all I'm going to say.
I wish it would be easy for me to say it. It's just like a good one.
You know, and something to keep in mind, with teaming up with Jeff Logan, he's got all the connections with the older guys, and I'm going to give you a list of people that won't be our first guest, but you very well could hear on this program, you know, people like Frank White and Brett and Louie Wilson and Willie Akins, who we already had on our show, but, you know, these are people that are already aligned in the A-10 family, not so much Brett, but obviously Frank White and all of them. These are people that Jeff Logan is very well attached to. These are people that are very likely to end up on our show at some point. So get to listening. Let us know, you know, who are the legends you like. But it's not just going to be legends. We're going to have some of that. We're definitely going to have some of the new guys. I'm efforting to get, you know, just like the Royal Man Report, we're going to get those same kind of names that you're used to. You know, we're going to get the minor leaguers. We're working on Bubba Starling and, you know, guys like that that we're working for our regular show, too. Those same guys are going to end up on, or, you know, the same type of guys are going to end up on this show. So don't think this is just a history show, because we're going to talk about baseball today. We're going to give you the same opinions that you've been used to here, and we're going to continue to do this show, but you're going to get it with a little different mix, a little different variety, and a really solid one-hour format, and it's going to have a nice combination of a look back at where baseball was and where baseball is now, and then, of course, if we have the minor league touch, and it'll be a little bit of where baseball can be, we would surely hope that we wouldn't be this bad for very long.
The idea is that just about anything can come out of the baseball vault. So
right.
You can have older players, you can have current players, you can have newer players. We may interview an 8-year-old up at AJ Wilson, and every now and then, anything, everything. We've basically got free reign, and then we are, like Troy said, we are going to continue the World Man Report every Sunday from 7 to the show. Okay, the second thing we need you guys to do after you follow KC Baseball Vault on Twitter, go to Facebook, search KC Baseball Vault, we're on there, add us on Facebook, and then those of you
also be an advertiser-driven show. So if you happen to have a lawn care service, or race a sprint, or whatever, and you might be interested in throwing a couple of bucks our way to help offset some of the costs, please do that. And by golly, we're crazy excited about this. We're going down there next Thursday. We're going to tape a test show.
You can look into between the lines as they're recording right as we're recording. So it's just going to be very surreal for all of us. Is it going to have a service show?
Okay, a couple more things. This Thursday, we are going to be recording our test show, but you guys need to listen to 810 after about 7 o'clock. Three guys in the garage, Jay Binkley, very good friend of the program, good friend of everything that the Echo Network's been doing. He's going to have us on for a segment, kind of talk about the show. We may or may not spill who our first guest is at that point in time. We're still working on it. And the other thing is that Friday, the day after Thursday, thank you, he's doing a remote at Hooters on Berry Road at about 7, anytime after about 7 o'clock. I'm going to go up there. We're going to do a tweet-up up at Hooters on Berry Road at 7 o'clock. My kid's going to be up there. I asked Brother if he would have been cut up into Hooters, and his eyes got really wide. So, and, we're going to be trying to support our friends over at Three Guys. They're going to do their best to support us. We're really excited. It's going to be, and we're not going to be up against, any of the primetime shows. We're not going to be up against both stations have their bonus hour there. Well, and we're going to be up against their, most of the time, their pregame show. So, we can do a little act here. So, I'm not sure. What else?
Well, I just want to thank, first off, I want to thank you guys for keeping the show together this last month. I ran into some hard times with the family this last month and spent a lot of time in Nebraska dealing with some funerals and what have you. And I just want to thank you three guys for keeping it together for me, keeping the show rocking, because I've missed a lot of shows and I'm going to miss a couple more before we're all said and done. But I'm really grateful that I have such a great team that we have built over this last year that could keep this show going for us while I was away, and now we got something else on our plate that's super special to me and super special to all of us, and it really shows what kind of power there is with Twitter and you folks that are out there that have driven this show this long. So I just want to thank you guys for that, and then I want to give a shout out to Jim Hyen, who's a friend of the family, and my family was all telling me, I guess he'd be my cousin's ex-husband, but my family was telling me that he listens to everything we do. They were spewing out some stuff that we've had on the show that they would not listen to and wouldn't know, but apparently he's mentioned it. So big shout out to Jim for listening to all of our shows. And like you were saying with Jay, just to extrapolate on that a little bit, he's the reason that the Royal Man Report exists. Without Jay Binkley taking me under his wing, we wouldn't have what we have. He was the one that kind of gave me the guidance I needed, and then we took that to a new level with Aaron Gennert's guidance in the studio, and we're able to create the show, now, which is obviously piloted by Chris. But I'm so grateful for everything Jay did, and to have him behind us while we get this 1510 show going, that's going to be really strong for us. So you got to listen to Three Guys in a Garage. I know we've been hard on 810 over the last year because we just wanted to be better, and they can be. Yeah, but Jay's a step in the right direction for 810. But definitely check him out on 810 because he's worth a listen. Three Guys in a Garage is the best program out there.
There you go. Yes, Troy Olson, Casey Royal, and pick us up. Well, we'll be up next Sunday. And we'll be up next Sunday. I'm going to be out at Friday, thank you. I think we'll probably post the podcast Sunday. It's not going to be a live show. We're going to be at Sprint Center. We're going to be broadcasting live from Sprint Center. We're going to be broadcasting, and we're going to be interviewing some members of the KC Command. We're going to be interviewing some members of the KC Media. We'll likely be interviewing folks like Steve St. John, Jay Binkley. We'll try to get Nick Wright to say hello. I don't know how to look for technical competition. We may turn a cold shoulder to us, but I doubt it. We'll probably get
a couple of shows off the internet.
It's totally off the internet at that point in time. So we're going to talk with him. We'll post the show Sunday, and then Thursday after next, May 10th, catch us on ESPN 1510 AM with the Kansas City Baseball Club. So, buddy, I think that's that. Unless you got anything else, man, I'm going to start rolling here.
I think you can wait.
All right. Adios, well, for Troy Olson, Casey Royal, and I am Chris Candler.
I'm Jeff Ward. Here's Powerball.
Thanks for joining us.
Go Royals. Go Royals. Good night.